Well, I knew a clergyman once who confided in me this story. One time when he was having a very rough spell in his ministry, he was seriously considering giving up being an ordained clergyman. And so one day he was out on a walk with his wife, and they came by a shop, an ice cream shop, and he was watching the man behind the counter as he was rolling ice cream into cones, and he turned to his wife and said, "You know, I could just quit tomorrow and roll ice cream." And she turned to him and said, "But what would you do on a bad day when you're rolling ice cream? What would you do then?" And he realized what a wise, simple, humble response his wife had given him, to let him know that whether you're rolling ice cream or you're an ordained clergyman, you're going to have rough seasons, and not to just give up. It's a sad story when we hear about clergy persons giving up their ordained ministry. But you know, sometimes, just sometimes, I feel like it's almost equally sad when I run into a lay person who tells me they're going to give up their career because they want to pursue ordained ministry. Just imagine if Joseph, who we talked about a couple weeks ago at Christmas time, if Joseph the builder had given up being a construction worker and decided that he wanted to go be a rabbi or a Pharisee, I don't think that a rabbi or Pharisee named Joseph would have went ahead and married Mary, the unwed mother of Jesus. So I want us to consider, just for a few moments here, some other people who, if they had given up their day jobs, things would have turned out quite differently. Take Susanna Wesley, for example. Back in the 1700s, she was a mother. That was all she did in her life. She was a mother. And a quite productive one at that. She had 19 children of her own. And amongst those 19 children happened to be Charles Wesley. We sing some of his hymns here once and again. And John Wesley, the great reformer in the Anglican Church. A little later, the next generation, think of William Wilberforce from Hull in England. If he had pursued his thoughts, which he did have, of giving up a life of politics and going into ordained ministry in the Anglican Church, slavery in this land may have never been abolished. There was a lady I came across one time. Her name was Mary Ramabai. And in the 1900s, she was in India, and she worked to reform different social institutions in India, working for justice for countless women and orphans, founding schools and hospitals. If she had become a pastor of some sort, those hospitals, those schools may have never been built. Edith Cavell, during World War I, was a nurse in Belgium. And through her work in Belgium, she helped about 200 Allied soldiers get across the border into Allied Netherlands to freedom. And then she was killed. And her story about being a nurse in Belgium inspired a young Belgian girl who in World War II became a nurse in Belgium and in turn saved 800 lives of Allied soldiers. If Edith Cavell had decided that nursing was not for her and she ought to be some sort of church worker, those 200 Allied soldiers probably never would have got saved. And her life would have never inspired a future generation of nurses. Truett Cathy is an American businessman who a few decades ago came up with what we call a chicken patty sandwich and opened up a chain of restaurants called Chick-fil-A. There's about 2,000 fast food outlets across the world called Chick-fil-A. And Chick-fil-A is probably the largest chain business in the world that on every Sunday, every single one of their shops are closed because Truett Cathy is a Christian and he believes that not only he, but all of his workers ought to have Sunday off every single week. One final example, Matt Kearney is a musician right now who is one of the brightest, most innovative, creative musicians in the contemporary music industry. And he's a dedicated evangelical Christian. He doesn't write worship songs as we would normally think of it, but all of his songs are interlaced with deep meaning about what life is about. If he had decided that he would rather become a pastor or something, we would be missing out on a lot of great music. So a construction worker named Joseph, a mother named Susanna, a politician named William, a social reformer named Mary, a nurse named Edith, a businessman named Truett, a musician named Matt. They're just a handful of examples of people who have literally changed the world. And they changed it not by being a pastor, not by being a missionary, but by doing the work that God gave them to do. John Stott, who was a pastor, sometimes pastors do good things, he wrote these words. John Stott said, "We often give the impression in the church, that is, that if a young Christian is really keen for Christ, he will undoubtedly become a foreign missionary. That if he is not quite as keen, he will stay at home and become a pastor. That if he lacks the dedication to be a pastor, he will no doubt serve as a doctor or teacher. While those who end up as a social worker or working in the media or, worst of all, in politics, they are not far removed from serious backsliding." But, John Stott says, Jesus Christ calls his disciples, all of his disciples, to ministry, that is, to service, says John Stott. And Jesus himself is the servant par excellence, and he calls us to be servants too. This much is certain. If we are Christians, we must spend our lives in the service of God and man. And he says, it is possible for Christians to interpret their life work Christianly, and to see it neither as a necessary evil, necessary that is for survival, nor even as a useful place in which to evangelize, nor to make money simply for evangelism, but to see their life work as their Christian vocation, as the way Christ has called them to spend their lives in his service. So says John Stott. Now, the reading that Ozzie read for us from Numbers today has some maths in it. 601,730 Israelites. 601,730 Israelites. That's quite a few. It's about, what, the population of Belfast? Something like that? No? Okay. In addition to that, 23,000 Levites. So you've got the 600,000 Israelites plus an additional 23,000 Levites. Now, I'm not great at math, but I did figure out with a calculator that that's around 4% of the total population. So about 4% of Israel were the Levites dedicated to round-the-clock work concerning the tabernacle and the worship of God, the religious life of the community. That means the other 96% were not Levites. The other 96% of them They were soldiers. They were goldsmiths. They were artists. They were shepherds. They were weavers. They were potters. They were cooks. They were nurses. That was the 96%. Our reading from the Good News according to Mark today has these words recorded. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. The man who was demon-possessed wanted to be a Levite. He wanted to go with Jesus and be with Jesus 24/7. Jesus did not let him go. Jesus said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." 4% of us might have a calling to be Levites. And we need Levites. Thank God for Lydia. Thank God that she's a Levite and that God has gifted her and called her to what she is doing. But for the rest of us, Jesus says, go home. Now, on the one hand, we need to focus our service to God right in the places God has put us, right in the jobs, right in the vocations that are in our hands. And so, if your job is washing cars, then wash cars to the best of your ability, glorify God in all you do, and look for ways to do that in a way that will uniquely serve your Lord. If you wait tables and you're frustrated because you're not getting any tips or anything, don't worry about what you're not getting. Worry about what you can give. How can you, when you're waiting tables, have an attitude, a demeanor of service that is so going to impress your guests, that's so going to impress your manager, that they're going to see the light of Christ shining through even how you wait tables? Now, on the one hand, we need to focus on how we can serve God and glorify God and honor him right where we are, doing whatever it is we've been given to do. But on the other hand, we are a part of this community, of this Christian body. And if we want it to work, if we want it to be thriving and a beautiful place and a place where others are attracted to come to worship God and to grow as Christians, well, then we need to look at examples like in Nehemiah. When Nehemiah called all of the people, not just the 4% Levites, but the 96% of Israel, he called 100% of them to come and to take a part in rebuilding the wall of Jerusalem. And so it says in Nehemiah chapter 3 that there was a goldsmith repairing one part of the wall, and next to him, there was a perfume maker who is repairing another part of the wall. And next to them was a governor of a district of Jerusalem. Down the road, there was somebody who simply lived in the house next to a part of the wall. And he figured it was his responsibility to rebuild that part of the wall. A little further down in another section, there were merchants who were rebuilding part of the wall. And then it says that some daughters of another man got together and they were rebuilding another part of the wall. So merchants, girls, homeowners, goldsmiths, perfume makers, all 100% of them getting together, working hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder, to build up God's city, God's community. And you know, I don't know much about perfume making or goldsmithing, but I imagine the tools they use wouldn't work too well for building up a wall, a stone or brick wall. And so we may not always be able to use the tools that we use in one part of our lives to build up another part of our life. But that shouldn't stop us just because we're not used to using maybe certain kind of tools. We need to be willing to get in there and build up the walls of the church, as it were. Now, forgive me, Gareth, but I believe that your rector should not have to be the one that comes in here and hoovers this place. I happen to believe that your rector should not be the one that once a month brings in bread for your communion. I happen to believe that your rector is not the one who ought to be setting up chairs down in the hall every time we have an event. I happen to believe that your rector ought not to feel like he has to pull tooth and nail to get a few people to help visit the older folks in our community. Nancy and I are amazed at the variety of gifts that we encounter every single week. We learn about somebody else in this congregation and Marilyn who has some gift that we never even knew about. And that is incredible. We are an incredibly gifted community. But somewhere around 4% of you are doing the lion's share of the work here. And we're either going to burn him out, and maybe that's okay with you, I don't know, but I don't think it is. And so, brothers and sisters, let's find a way, going before God, to come together. And I want you, and Gareth wants you, to serve God wherever it is, in your jobs, in your homes, in your schools. But if we want to be able to come here and to worship him, then we need to come together and build up the walls here. Let me leave you with a couple lines from another man, Nicholas Herman, who was a dishwasher in France. And this humble dishwasher said these words: "We ought not to be weary of doing little things for the love of God. God, who regards not the greatness of the work, but the love with which it is performed." He also said, "You can serve God in the midst of your business. Let's do our common business purely for the love of God, to set his consecrating mark on all we lay our hands to." Amen.